Tango Tango Papa, 1864, September 3rd, 2014.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Council Bluffs, Iowa. So, if you've been following my videos, then you know that I spent several days, actually over last weekend, beginning last weekend, I was at Lincoln, Nebraska, had to kind of wait to get the A service maintenance performed on my truck, and so ended up having to wait probably 3.5 days anyway from the time I got there. I'd have to think about that. The time I got there to the time that I actually was able to leave, it might have been even longer than that, but something like that. So anyway, I was there, got there Saturday afternoon, so Sunday, and then they started working on it Monday, and then it was early Tuesday afternoon when they finally, or it might have been mid-afternoon when they finally got it out of the shop. But they ended up working on the front brakes, and they changed a bunch of the tires and so on and so forth, even though it was just an A service. And that's one of the reasons I don't really mind having to wait for the maintenance, because they generally do a pretty thorough job, and the maintenance really needs to be done. So a lot of people complain about it, and there's this really kind of pointless, because it does have to be done, and if it's not done, then sooner or later the truck's going to end up broken down on the side of the road or worse. And so the maintenance is absolutely necessary, and I figure there are times where I have to wait longer for the maintenance, and then there's other times where it happens much quicker. And so I figure, it's kind of like the investment idea, dollar cost averaging. Well, I figure in the end it's all going to kind of average out, and so there's really really no point in complaining about it. The waiting is going to happen, and it's just sort of part of existence. Any kind of existence. We don't live in a perfect world. Everything doesn't go perfectly. Things kind of bump along. Sometimes they go better, sometimes they go worse. And this isn't meant to be a perfect world. What's meant to be perfect is, or to become perfect, is our sort of reaction. Really isn't quite the right word. The way we sort of react to the world, that's not quite the right word that I'm looking for. But it has to do with how we sort of relate, I guess would be a better term, relate to the world and so on and so forth, but more so than that, how we relate to whatever it is that gives us awareness, essentially that created us, and so on and so forth. And you know, I was thinking earlier today, this thought kind of popped into my head, and I've talked about it before, the idea that sort of pseudo morality, to one extent or another, because we're born in sin, we're all sort of afflicted with varying degrees of sort of pseudo morality, sort of a false morality, because we are born in sin. And so the difference is that some of us are sort of happy with the false morality, and we're sort of looking for ways to kind of reinforce the pseudo morality, sort of reinforce sort of an externalized existence, you know, becoming more of whatever it is that we are from the outside. And some of us are looking for, we know that there's something wrong with that, existing in that way, existing as an externalized animal, externalized creature. We know that there's something that's not satisfying about that for whatever reason, and that for whatever reason is kind of a mystery as to why some of us are that way. But we're looking for the real answer. And but you know, so you're either moving in one direction or you're moving in another. You're moving in the other. And there are really only two directions to move in. So reality is always trying to catch, it's always catching up with us, whether we like it or not. And so if you're entire existence, if you're sort of living in a false world, you got a sort of a false morality, you're living in a world that where up is down and down is up and green is pink and right is wrong and wrong is right, and you're always kind of looking for reinforcements. And the reason you're always looking for reinforcements to sort of reinforce that view is because reality always has a tendency to catch up. And so, go back to the example that I've given many times. Let's say you're a female and you've had an abortion. You didn't keep your legs closed, and for whatever, you know, and you ended up having sex, you know, kind of illicit sex outside of marriage, and maybe you're, you know, whatever, and so then you want to get rid of the, you know, become pregnant, want to get rid of the pregnancy, and so then you begin to think of it in terms, oh, it's just a non-viable tissue mass, and it's unwanted byproduct of sex, and it's just some kind of a biological, it's just a tadpole, and you know, you go to the doctor and the doctor will get rid of it. It's just a growth, after all. Well, in reality, you've murdered your child. You know, because if you're a female or a male, for you know, it does, you know, the, you know, because it takes two to tango. It takes a man and a woman in order to make a baby. If you, and it doesn't matter what which sex you are, if you sort of waste, you know, you bring a child into the world, say, you know, you end up bringing a child into the world, you can either, you know, do it the right way, the way you're supposed to, you know, get married and so on and so forth, and you're responsible, and then you can have kids. You either do it the correct, you do it the right way, the way you should do it, or you just, it just sort of happens and you do it the wrong way. And you sort of bring a child into the world, you bring children into the world that you've done them, as a parent, you've done them a horrible disservice, and you've given them even more of a reason to resent you. And or you decide, well, we'll abort it, kill the child. And so let's say that you're a female and you've killed your child, you've murdered your child. Well, then you have to go around, because the guilt of doing that, the guilt of murdering another human being, is horrific enough, but then add on top of it the fact that it was your own child and it was part of your own body, then you've got a serious, serious problem. You've got just imagine what that guilt is. And so you try to find other people that will reassure you that you really did the right thing. No, in fact, you really did the noble thing. It was really a good thing that it was just an unwanted child, and it would have had a horrible life, and so on and so forth, all the rationalizations. And so in the meantime, you find your friends, your slimy friends that sort of reassure you, try to shore up, kind of like shoring up a house that's built on shifting sands, sort of shore it up. So in the meantime, this creeping thing comes back in, this guilt that you're running away from becomes worse. And rather than just facing it, facing the guilt, if you do something wrong, let's say you've murdered your child, if you want to really deal with it properly, the proper way to deal with it is just face the guilt. Just face it. That's the proper way to do it. But if you run away, and you try to find other people to sort of agree with you that right is wrong and wrong is right, and so on and so forth, that how you know what you know is right, because your friends all agree that, you come to sort of a consensus. excuse me. Come to, your friends all come to a consensus that it's really okay to kill your baby. It's really okay to shack up, and it's really okay to rob, and all of those things. That always falls apart. It always has a tendency to fall apart. So, the proper way of dealing with it is to allow reality to catch up with you. Because we have a tendency to always want to run away. So there's this meditation technique on my website, truckertompodcast.com. Up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. You can click on that. And I've got about four or five files that are hosted right there on the site that essentially teach you a very simple meditation technique. But I want to go ahead and go through it right now. It's very simple. So what I want you to do is, I'm assuming you're sitting down, and assuming you're not driving, because you can't really do what I'm about to, because I'm going to tell you to close your eyes in a minute. Can't really do that while you're driving, obviously. But you don't want to try it while you're driving. With your eyes closed, but I'm assuming you're sitting down, and so just you sit down, and I'm sitting down. I'm sitting down on the edge of my bunk here, my sleeper. The computer's in front of me. There's a pull-out kind of a table top type thing that's built into the truck that I have my computer sitting on in front of me. So I'm sitting here, and I've got my feet on the floor, And so what I want you to do is just put your hand sort of down by your side, your right hand. Got the microphone in my left hand. And so now close your eyes. So I'm closing my eyes. And what I want you to do is look at the inside of your eyelids. And so when I close my eyes, I have my eyes closed, and I'm looking at the inside of my eyelids. And as I look at the inside of my eyelids, I see only kind of what I could describe as, they're sort of like, you could call them sort of like dancing pixels. They're sort of subtle. They're not really, there's not anything really dramatic. It's not like dreaming or anything. But if you look at the inside of your eyelids, you'll see kind of little dancing pixels, like little sort of almost like little points of light. And it's very subtle, but you can actually, if you look, you can see colors in those little points of light. And so, you know, continue to look. Just kind of notice those, those little dancing pixels. As you look at the inside of your eyelids. And a really remarkable thing happens. Because as you kind of deliberately look at the inside of your eyelids, and it doesn't take much effort, doesn't take any effort, just look at the inside of your eyelids. Notice, look at the sort of this visual, subtle visual display of the dancing pixels as you look at the inside of your eyelids. You're suddenly not in your thoughts. We can only be aware of one thing at a time. If you think you're aware of more than one thing at a time, you're fooling yourself, because we're really aware of only one thing at a time. We have this point of awareness, and we can only really be aware of one thing at a time. And so if you kind of continue to notice those dancing pixels, you look at the inside of your eyelids, as you look at the inside of your eyelids, you're not in your thoughts. And so while you're doing this, and so I got my hand down to my side, my right hand, so notice your first finger. So I'm noticing my index finger on my right hand. And as I kind of notice it, and I'm continuing to look, I'm continuing to notice the inside of my eyelids, but I'm also noticing, also becoming aware of my index finger. And as I become aware of my index finger, it tingles a little bit. It's similar, it's almost like a, I've described in the past, you look at the kind of the little dancing pixels on the inside of your eyelid. It's kind of like a visual tingling, but your finger will tingle. As you become aware of your finger, it tingles. Once it tingles, make a little note. Yeah, it's tingling. Yeah, it's tingling. And so then move your attention to your second finger. And then you'll notice that it also begins to tingle. So you say, yes, it's tingling. Move your attention to your third finger. And once it begins to tingle, say, you know, kind of wordlessly say yes, acknowledge that it's tingling, and then move your attention to your pinky finger, the little finger. And then it will begin to tingle. And then bring your attention back to your thumb on your right hand until it begins to tingle. Notice it tingling, then begin to, you know, then move your attention to your index finger once again. And at the same time, continue to notice sort of the pixels, little flashing lights on the inside of your eyelids. Index finger begins to tingle, move your attention to the middle finger. And it begins to tingle. Move your attention then to, once it begins to tingle, move your attention to the next finger, third finger, until it begins to tingle. Then move your attention to your pinky finger again. And it begins to tingle. So now, open your eyes. And a rather remarkable thing happens. The world looks brighter. You look around, the world does look brighter. And it's not simply because you've had your eyes closed. When you notice, you get out of your thoughts, and you get out of your imagination. You come into the moment, because the moment, this moment is all that exists. The past does not exist. The future does really not exist. They're really concepts. The only thing that actually exists is this moment. So that's all there really is to that meditation technique, and all you have to do is do that a couple of times a day. And it's really simple. And if you find that it helps you, you find that that you feel better, that you know your problems end up feeling more distant, you feel more calm, so on and so forth, then it's up to you to continue with it. But that's really all there is to the meditation technique, and it's very, very simple, but yet it's extraordinarily powerful. Don't even try to analyze why it works. You can't. It's not possible. So, anyway, I want to go ahead and read the next chapter from Gravity Driven Universe. So, we're ready for chapter 19 of part 2 of Gravity Driven Universe. So, the title of the chapter is A Poetic Restatement. So there's a quote here from Albert Einstein in 1930. I maintain that the cosmic religious feeling is the strongest and noblest motive for scientific research. And that's from Albert Einstein. I believe that the ancient Jewish and Christian mystics had knowledge about the origin of the universe beyond that of modern science. They knew by a faith that needed no scientific proof. They knew the universe had a beginning and hence a beginner. They knew that from no thing came everything. They fathomed the unfathomable and spoke of it in the limited language and scientific understanding of their time. As a spiritual finishing touch to this work, allow me to copy the characteristic style and message of these mystics, believing that their flowing and poetic prose addresses itself more deeply and therefore more accurately to the mystery of the science. The essentials of this work are now restated in this poetic form to the end that the reader will more fully grasp and appreciate the spirit behind the creation of all the works of God the Father, Supreme Scientist and Savior of the world. Before the beginning, the Creator is, and in Him the universe pre-exists. All that came from Him, all that is came from Him, and without Him not a single thing came into being out of that which was. And so God enacted will, and by divine command His word alone created He the heavens and the earth. And so out of the calm center of the universe of universal being flowed divine energy. Out of the stillness it came, the primal motion of creation. Around and around it goes and comes, forming the spherical boundaries of the cosmos. And tiny things birthed from this force fall out, floating in the primal sea that is also time. And all that is in motion from the stillness, compressed, spinning, moving in orbits, cycles, and circles around the timeless soul of self. Because the Timeless One enacted will, there was energy. Because of energy, motion. Because of motion, matter. Because of matter, space-time. Divine energy is all there is, manifesting in the all of creation as the seen and the unseen, the one revealed through the other. From the eternal beyond comes now the infinite universe, a procession of energies, which after being transformed into matter, become sculptured into all the glories of creation, infinitely unfolding, beauteous exemplars of all things pre-existing with God. While sustaining the universe, the divine force also manifests as man's divine essence, the quickener of men's longing souls. While God is incomprehensible, His essence can be seen in everything He creates. So how can those with perverse intellects, never having discovered how to separate their souls from the molecular bondage to their mortal natures, ever fathom what lies beyond nature's boundaries? They can do little but dabble in equations, ascribing understanding to what is only the dryness of rote learning. Never will they experience the joy of realizing that God is in the universe and the universe is in God, one sustaining the other being sustained. While all things are sustained from the beginning by His reinforcing power, only man can reach inward toward the beginning to receive His direct personal essence, the like of which is reserved for the good angels and the children of the light. The malevolent ones are deprived of this intimate quickening, whereas the inspired, being infilled with emanations of His primal essence, reflect His likeness in much the same way as the moon acts as a secondary likeness to the sun. As the moon reflects the light of the sun, so too we achieve knowledge of the sun and beyond Him, the Father. Whosoever partakes of this inner universal light also possesses spiritual power, a knowledge understood as faith to the degree to which he or she has matured in the light. True love for God is need. To need is to love. Not to need him is in denial of him, and thus to be filled up with the love of the world. Even love's true yearning comes from him and goes back up to him as the cry for redemption. Thus does the absence of sensual passion and emotion in the pursuit of virtue constitute love for God, whereby love has space to enter and displace the indwelling worldly evil, bringing with it, as God's love always does, all the bounty and blessings of the Spirit. Those souls sweetened by means of God's infilling love reveal His character within them. Not even does the cosmos revolve about its own nature, except by the spirit of its origin. All celestial motion turns about the soul of itself, advancing, unfolding in succession and change through timeless times from pre-existent will. For at the heart of the heavens there lies a timeless realm with no other place beyond. Such heavenly worlds, by virtue of their timeless nature, are ethereal. For what can be above nature except that which is spiritual? Where can there be anything so subtly formed? That region beyond the spherical dimension of time cannot admit corporeal bodies such as ours. While flesh and blood cannot enter there, this does not prevent a soul from crossing the stillness into this paradigm, purified of sensual attachments. This realm, while coexisting with ours, encompasses the boundary of the physical universe, since it is from this region the cosmos came. And so it came to pass in assigning the boundaries between the paradigms of heaven and the material realms, the majestic craftsman set into motion the order of existence, and set within its finished order the triumph of his will, of all his creations, man, reflecting his likeness, part heaven, part earth, a living soul in material form. How delicately is man balanced in his respondings and in their unfolding order. Observe the gravities the material pulls upon his allegiance, how they pit him against the spirit who made him spirit, in the very material world God also created. And to what end, you may ask, is this conflict shaped? The direct answer would be to rob the mystery of its discovery, of the vital searching beyond which there is eternal life. Therefore, man, the created, is made different by virtue of this divine command, whereby love born from freely chosen allegiance might one day bring forth abundant fruits now hidden and stored within man. And in the day of the perfect time, there will pour out true love, one for another and from each to all. The kingdom of heaven is poised to receive the longing of the weary souls of the prodigal sons and daughters of the Father, who, after expending their essence on egocentric and selfish pursuits, having debased themselves by their own defiant wills, and being now spiritually impoverished, look forward with wistful longing to the realm of the kind Father, from whom they were born separated. Such repentant longing being the only love one can have for the Father. All creatures, animal and man, possess life force, but the noetic nature of man possesses not only animal life, but also the direct essence from God Himself, a unique attribute capable of quickening and transforming the soul of the being united with Him. Angels, being inferior to man, do not possess this duality. They did not receive the earthly form, and thus cannot animate the being they do not possess, and therefore cannot be redeemed, as man can be, from the body that contains his fall. Therefore is the soul in the body a bridge between two worlds, whereby one acts through the other, and through which conduit his will might manifest on earth. For unlike angels, it is from a body that the lost soul is redeemed. And so each one, in his stubborn pride, misses not only the quickening of God's eternal life essence, but forfeits, by way of denial, the abundance of things to come. For in the season of selfishness, each soul has a self-existent essence similar to the self-existent one, a life essence potentially different from the temporal life of creatures, under the order of nature from the very beginning when God commanded, "Let there be." And so while the first man had two origins, the noetic nature he fell from and the animal he fell into, mankind is now born first of nature to be reborn back into spirit. O fallen Adamic man, behold the mercy of your God, your choice is yet unspent, and salvation is close at hand. The first descending order ends now, full circle, complete to the beginning, the quickening spirit from the timeless realm from which the universe came and was preformed, enters now from within our longing for salvation as a rebirth, for the home of God is the softened, repentant heart of man. Do not therefore inquire as to what your end shall be, for the yearning soul journeys back home, briskly returning like the prodigal son. For where the end of the journey is, here and now is the dawn of a new beginning. Seek, yearn, and find, knock, and the door will open. He awaits. Who has ears to hear, let him also understand. And so that was chapter 19, and so the next time we will be ready for chapter 20. So, I think I'm going to go ahead and bring this to a close here in a bit. By the way, the completely unrelated note, no pun intended, Samsung today was September the 2nd, so Samsung had their event in Berlin, Germany. They presented the Galaxy Note 4. And what else? The Galaxy Gear S and virtual reality headset that works with the Galaxy Note 4. And then they have another phone, Galaxy Note 4 Edge, that has a bit of a different screen. And so the Note 4 looks pretty neat. I guess it's going to go on sale, depending on your carrier, next month. Now, I think I'm on a plan with Sprint where I can get get a new phone. I'm paying basically for it, so I get a new phone once a year. And I've not had the Note 3 yet for a year, so I'm not gonna try to upgrade right away. But since I'm paying for the thing where I get a new phone every year, once I become eligible, I might as well go ahead and take advantage of it. But the Note 4 looks very similar to the Note 3, so they didn't really change the design, because the Note 3 is very successful as it is, so they kept the same size screens, 5.7, but it's a much higher resolution display, and the people that had the hands-on experience with it were sort of raving about the display. It's supposed to have actually even better battery life than the Note 3. It's got a slightly larger battery, but it's got more megapixels and it got improved cameras and so on and so forth. So it's pretty nice device, pretty nice looking device, lots of nice features, and they made sort of incremental improvements. And it's even got optical image stabilization for the camera on the back, which is that's pretty interesting. So, looks like a pretty nice device. But I'm not ready to upgrade yet. But I'll have to check and see when I'm eligible for an upgrade. But I am on a program, as I understand it. I'm on a program. The plan that I have, I can basically upgrade once a year, so I have to check and see when I got the Note 3 and move to the Note 4 at some point. So anyhow, want to get this put together and uploaded, and I ended up, the load that I'm on had three drops, and so I've already delivered two. One of them was last night at 1 a.m. It was in Kansas City, Kansas, and then the next one was at Bonner Springs, Kansas, which is another suburb of Kansas City. That was just, I don't know, it was like 14 miles away or something. So I went over there, and it was about 6, I don't know, what time was it, about 6:30 when I got out of there, something like that. So I left there, and then I went up to, there's a truck stop. It's Squaw Creek Truck Stop, but I don't remember the name of the little town, but it's up north of Kansas City, in north of St. Joseph. So that's where I stopped, and I slept there. That's where I took my break, and then once the break was over, I came on up here, and so I'm at Council Bluffs, and I'm taking another break, and so the final drop delivers over across the river from here in Omaha at 10 a.m., and so I'll leave here probably maybe about 9 a.m., maybe 8:30, 9 a.m., and then I'll go on over and go to the place where the load delivers and be there by 10 a.m. Then, of course, I have no clue yet where I'll be going after this. Won't find that out until tomorrow. So I did sleep a good chunk of the day away today, so I'll try to sleep tonight. I don't know how successful it's going to be. But if I can sleep just a little bit tonight, then that should be enough to kind of get me back into a regular sleeping pattern. Even though I was kind of mostly up all night last night, I did try to lay down and sleep, but I don't know if I actually went to sleep or not while I was waiting to get unloaded. At that first drop, I don't know if I actually slept or not. I might have slept a little bit, but so if I can sleep a little bit tonight, then it should, I should get back to kind of more of a normal sleeping pattern. So in any case, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.